It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett, and with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
Oh, so much. I'm in the midst of a severe thunderstorm warning here, which Wisconsin Rapids treats like it's some sort of tornado for whatever reason.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's good for the kids.
It's good for the kids to have sirens going off because, you know, there's lightning. But anyhow, thank you again, everybody, for joining us this wonderful week here in, I guess, mid to late, getting to be late August pretty soon here.
It is. The sun went down at 8:15 tonight. I was outside mowing trying to get done before this podcast, and it was like, it's dark outside. Is it 9 o'clock? That sneaks up on you. The end of the summer days ending quickly. They sneak up on you quick because just a month ago, I was outside until 9:30 at night with lots of light, and here we are. And plus, I was up north all this last week, which, believe it or not, there is a half an hour more of light at night up north. Because from southern Wisconsin, where I'm at, right on the border, all the way up to way northern Wisconsin into Minnesota, it's almost half an hour more light just because it's one-tenth of the way to the North Pole.
Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's think odd about that. When you end up in places where you don't expect that kind of thing, like when we were in – I was in Edinburgh. Yeah. And you're like, wow, it stays – very bright for quite a while here, and you just forget how much further north you are suddenly, and how
Edinburgh is as far north as Fairbanks, I think, right? It's way up there.
I couldn't say for certain, but yes,
at least Anchorage.
I don't know.
The world is far, and so just the opposite is true too. When I first moved down here, it was winter time, and the sun would like crack through my window at like 6 a.m. and I was like, what's this? Because in Duluth, the sun doesn't come up until 7:30. So hot sunrise, sunset talk here to start the show.
It's amazing.
Folks. Thank you.
It's awesome. All right. Thank you to all of our wonderful listeners coming at us from all over the United States this last week. Actually getting more love from Virginia than Wisconsin recently here, which is quite a deal. And I blame Aaron for that. I don't know why, but I do.
Well, maybe what's his name? The coach from Virginia, Stevens Point native. He got turned on.
I'm sure that Tony Bennett loves us. Number one in your hearts.
And now hates me because I couldn't remember his name.
They'll be mad at you, but I remember you, Tony. I remember you. Yeah, I remember you, UWGB.
Tony, you're a great linebacker for the Packers. I love your music.
Love your music. You were a great pass rusher. You would right after Tim Harris left.
Yes. Oh, big 97.
And I can't remember if there was crossover with Tony Bennett and Tim Harris, the old six shooter. But anyhow, thank you again for all our wonderful listeners, wherever it is that you listen to us, when we're available across many spectrums of podcast platforms here. Wherever you do listen to us, remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. Hey, we actually have news to talk about this week, so let's get right into everything and start talking about our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
Yeah, we had to get over the fact too that Aaron, starting our main event, we've spent plenty of time talking about weather sirens and such.
Yeah.
So that's a good part of our podcast, and that's a part of your life you'll never get back. But anyhow, a couple of things we want to talk about. Packers training camp has been full force in effect here at this point, which is how I normally describe bond conditions in my line of work. But they are in full force in effect here. They have been in practice. They have been in pads. They have been running through things. Some of the most encouraging stuff that I have seen so far is all the video of Aaron Rodgers spending specific time making sure that he is, working with Love. Love clearly needs footwork practice. You can see it in all the videos.
The Love kid that's going to be a fun joke for years to come.
Yeah, yeah. Love
Aaron Rodgers has been working with Love. Yeah, he has.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be, get engaged in a Love jersey. You want to. No, but anyhow, just in watching several films of the footwork, he just doesn't have it. He's rushing through things. He cuts corners on his steps. His depth is slightly off. And for an NFL offense, it's not okay. It just is not okay. That works in college because athleticism can save you in college.
Absolutely.
Athleticism does not save you in the NFL because everybody's athletic in the NFL. Everybody was saved by their athleticism in college. What gets you to the NFL is that you have the other stuff. And Love definitely needs to work in that footwork. And I'm not worried about it because nobody expects him to do anything this year or next year. So he's sitting there. And the thing that I love is that Aaron Rodgers is taking the time in practice. I've seen a bunch of video of this because they're not letting a lot of people in. The only thing they'll let them videotape and tweet out is individual practice stuff because they don't want anyone to know who is the starting, you know, who are the top three wide receivers if we go three wide, which has made a lot of people very angry. And I don't know, Aaron, do you care that much whether or not the Packers allow the reporters that they bring into their closed practices to talk about how much they are playing, you know, MVS versus EQ versus, you know, Kumaro, numero uno. Do you care?
It's a departure from the last couple regimes. I guess I would have to say every regime that I can remember back from the Wolf era. I mean, I can't speak to much before the Wolf era because I was a child. I shouldn't be talking about things that I remember from when I was 10 years old. If I would go with my 10-year-old mind, Don Majkowski is the greatest quarterback of all time, and that's why I have a love affair with Tim Harris, the aforementioned, and Johnny Holland as well, and Chuck Cecil. What other names can come up? Jeff Query.
Perry Kemp.
Perry Kemp, thank you. Who was our big tight end during that time?
We had Ed West.
Ed West, thank you.
Ed West. Sanjay Beach was a tight end that we had for several years in there.
Johnny Rutgers was Ken our left
Rutgers.
Tackle.
Kenny Rutgers.
Ken Rutgers, thank you.
James Campen at center.
Holden Harry Gilbreth.
Oh, yes.
Iron.
John Yurkovich. John Yurkovich, of course.
John Yurkovich, who was our starting running back?
No, we didn't have Hayward. Brent Fulwood at fullback, Keith Woodside. Yes. Brent Fulwood and Keith Woodside.
Keith Woodside, I got him confused. Sorry,
it was the double wood, combo.
Yes, exactly. who else do we have? Brian Noble. Let's bring that up too.
Brian Noble, Johnny Holland. Yeah.
Terrell
Mark
Buckley.
Lee. Yeah. Terrell Buckley. T. Buck. My little brother had a T-Buck jersey.
Sorry, what did you ask me?
Slipped into a 1991 podcast somehow, which could not have existed.
It's like the 82 Brewers Twitter handle that I follow. That's basically been every day is like this day in 1982, and they report every single game from the Brewers 82 season. I think it's just a change in regime too. Because, I mean, maybe they're a little bit more closed, hold the cards close to the vest as opposed to during McCarthy. It was everything was an open book with McCarthy. I mean, he didn't hold anything back really. I mean, at least it seems that way. And you know, neither did Sherman before that.
Let me interrupt a little bit here on this. So one thing to take into consideration here is that there are specific NFL rules governing this. If you have an open practice where you allow fans to enter or sell tickets, even if you sell a ticket for them to come in, you have to allow media in and they can report whatever they see. And you also have to allow other teams in to videotape it because you're allowing people to buy a ticket. So once you do that, it changes the rules. But nobody has open practices right now because they're not allowed to. So technically, the Packers are in a very different situation than normal in that every other season we have ever lived through, the Packers have had open practices where fans were allowed to come in for free. It has always been free. There's no ticket price to get into Ray Nitschke Field. You just need to get there early because the seats will fill up other years other than this one. So does that change your answer in any way, though?
That absolutely 100% changes my answer then, yes. Okay. So never mind that. So because I didn't hear anything about it last year, so I guess I was just like, I don't know, maybe that's the way they're going to go forward now. And last year during the transition year, everything was still business as usual. But if nobody else is telling you what's going on, then why should the Packers be telling anybody what's going on? It's competitive advantage to all the other teams, you know? kind of like how some teams will have fans and other teams won't. You know, why show any cards that you have if nobody else has to?
Well, and a lot of other teams never have open practices for their fans because they don't really care that much about their fans. But the Packers, being a very much a community, not just community owned, but a community based team, have always allowed fans in. Mm-hmm. So it's something we're not used to. This is a completely different world that we're in right now in terms of not just, you know, going to Walmart, but in dealing with the Packers, because they're not going to have more than, what, 13,000 people in a game day. It's going to be they're not going to have anybody for the first month, and they're going to reevaluate, to be clear. Sorry. But, I mean, it just changes the entire dynamic of how a team like the Packers, which is so very much just devoted to making sure that the team is available to their public, has to deal with the public in a way that, you know, the public can feel, I guess, safe and comfortable with, but also protects the players. Because the biggest thing is making sure we have a season. Because we can't guarantee that that's a thing that's going to happen. We can't guarantee there will be a season, generally speaking, unless we can maintain these sorts of things. And yeah, it's a very different world. But if they do this next year, there will be riots. Is my feeling.
Yeah.
Right?
No, we're going to bring bikes up there. And I'll tell you what, there's going to be a Packer on my daughter's bike. And that's all there is to it. I've been waiting for this day. It was supposed to be this year, John. Hey, so I just had a random thought pop into my head. So,
well, that's what we're here for.
Just a thought, because I'm thinking about, like, so one of the things about Lambeau Field that gives them a definite advantage is that A, it's loud. And B, it's cold.
And it's natural grass. It's outdoors.
And it's natural grass outdoors. Now, that said, I mean, come December, if they're playing in front of no fans, do you really play in Lambeau Field? It really doesn't make any difference. And as a matter of fact, I mean, yeah, it's an advantage to the Packers for the cold because some of the players are used to it, but that used to be a much bigger advantage when players were on the same teams for years on end. I mean, Rodgers plays well in the cold, so I'd be all for it. But, I mean, is that a 100-yard field inside?
in the Don Hudson Center?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's a 100-yard field, right?
I believe they have a 100-yard field in there. And they especially make sure that they use that – because, you know, when they go play in places like Minnesota, they can pump in crowd noise. They can, you know, play inside in warm and get used to whatever they're going to have that week and acclimate themselves, kind of like we did at Camp Beering.
Right. Yeah, great point. But no, I thought about that, or even, like, I don't know. I mean, it'd probably be too much work to retrofit Miller Park for eight games or for a couple games.
Terrible.
Winter Park.
No,
winter
time. No, don't, you can't play them at Miller Park.
The dimension. Well, no, because the dimensions aren't right, right? You just can't.
Yeah, it's terrible. You couldn't do that.
Okay. Well, I meant if there's no fans, though, I mean, could you lay down 120-yard length of field that's 66 yards wide? I mean, because who cares if it's got bad vantage points because nobody's watching, you know, from the stands. So that's kind of, I was just getting at, just random thought in my head, like, do they still, if it's a blizzard outside and 20 below zero, do you still play the game out in the snow in front of nobody? That seems almost asinine. Really, it does. Like, because it's like, that does no good for anybody. It's, the novelty is fun of watching people play in a foot of snow, but it's terrible football. It really is.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. It's hard to play, but that's the thing you get used to when you do this, is you say, like, we live here every day, and, you know, the cold is only scary to people who walk in the cold for the first time. When you spend fall and winter coming into the cold, you have gotten used to the cold. I mean, in the way that anybody can get used to the cold, which is mostly you put on another layer. You know, it's like whenever you're dealing with cold, you can always put on another layer. And I mean, when I go to Packer games in December, it's, you know, several layers. It's the silk weights. It's the, you know, jeans with sweatpants or something. You know, it's just you put on two, three layers, four layers, whatever it takes to get there.
Get on that toque. So I'm going to call my shot much. I'm going to call my shot much like I accurately did with the Bucks last week, and we'll talk more about that during the during the NBA portion. But I'm going to throw a prediction out there just because I know it's coming, because I just brought it up now. One of the worst weather events in Green Bay Packer history will happen during one of their home games this year during the wintertime, whether it be just a massive blizzard or record wind chills in the negative 30s or something like that. That will happen. And they'll have to play that game in front of no fans just to go against the climate.
All you right, watch. Everybody, you save this podcast.
You watch it. You watch it. Like, that's what's going to happen, just because that's the way this year is working out so far. So Nostraflotamus is going to call that shot right there.
Nostraflotamus.
Nostraflotamus, you're welcome for that one.
All right. Well, it's good to know. I will draft my fantasy football teams remaining accordingly.
Just remember, all Packer home games, don't play anybody in that game because they're going to have 0 yards. Yeah. The final score will be Mason Crosby kicking a brick of a football through the field goal uprights from 20 yards out with 3 seconds left.
Amazing. I live for that. That sounds so great.
It'll be just like that Dallas game too, where it'll be going towards the crossbar and you're going to think he's going to miss it. And last second, it'll just shank in right. Yes.
No double doink.
No double doink. Just go right at that crossbar. And last second, 10 yards, I'll just fade to the middle. Like the Dallas playoff game. I saw those highlights on Twitter the other day, and I forgot, like, when he kicked that right after the Jared Cook catch on the sidelines, that amazing catch, like the next play when he kicked that field goal, that ball was going straight at the left upright. Like, you're like, oh no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. And then, like, last second, it faded. It barely made it inside that upright. Sure, it was probably more like 3 feet, but it looked like a foot. Anyhow.
Just fun side note. I one time had a NCAA 13 game where I was playing an FCS team as New Mexico State, and I had their kicker double doink it. Oh, and it would have been so funny if I had ever seen it before, except for the only other time I've ever seen that was the, you know, Parkey. So good.
Cody Parkey.
Oh, geez. Darn it.
Oh, that little Parkey kid down the street. Yes.
he's such a good boy.
He's got such a big leg.
Oh, I hope he finds somewhere else to go.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
I feel like we're missing something with the Packers here.
I don't know. But we are having some fun Uper accents, at least, if nothing else.
COVID tests, right? Were we going to talk about that?
No. Well, we can just mention in passing, the Packers had apparently several of the COVID tests have had the false negatives. I mean, there have been false positives as well. False positives, false negatives. There were a couple false positives, I guess, associated with the Packers team this year. So they have been able to be cleared now that they were shown to have taken the second test and gotten through. They're not horribly reliable tests yet. There just isn't reliable testing yet, but they're going to keep, at least the NFL has the money to make sure they get the test and keep working it so that they can try to keep the players safe. So far it's been fine because they've been in very controlled environments at this point, and you know, the wheels have not fallen off before games, at least.
Right. I say, if you want a full NFL season, let's just play it like China and just not test anybody. The bigger problem is, so the Packers are barely affected by it. It was just a couple people, but some teams, I think the Vikings were one of the teams too, because that's where I heard it was on KFAN. Like, they had quite a few people test. Like,
they had bars.
And so one of the more alarming things is, like, we need to figure this out, because what happens if the night before, you know, the Friday test that comes back on Saturday before the game eliminates one third of your team and they're all false positives. Like,
I bet they run them two or three times. Everybody who gets a positive is going to come back and do another rapid test, I'm sure.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, they got to get something in place for that, because right now it's during the preseason, and yeah, you can be like, oh, okay. And, you know, like, there's a bunch of teams that were going to, so the Vikings were one of the teams that were going to cancel practice. And then there was a couple other teams like, we're canceling practice. And then all of a sudden, like an hour later, it's like, no, we're having practice today. Now, like, kind of annoyingly, like, you know, like, I can't believe. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the bigger problem. You know, like, what happens when the Packers wind up to go play against, I don't even know who's on it. Well, I know the Detroit Lions are on this. So they go to, you know, Detroit has one third of their team, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm like, are we flying to Detroit tomorrow or not?
Like, well, and they start with the Vikings, like, that's the first game. They're gonna have to start doing that too. So yeah,
right, yeah, like, are we flying to
They're there a day before, so they probably have to deal with that before they even. I mean, they're gonna deal with those testings on site in the other places. This is actually the one thing that seems to make more sense for football than the other sports, and I don't know how college football has tried to address this, I guess. But the NFL plays one game a week. They have 6 other days then to figure out who's where and who's what and isolate and deal with it. like baseball's problem has been that they play every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of games the Cardinals have missed already is because they've missed games because they've had to be back there the next day. And they're like, no, we can't. We're still dealing with this thing. And it's just, it's going to be different with football. They can try to address it differently. They can try to feel with that. I still don't know why they haven't enlarged the rosters in any sort of meaningful way, well, in any way at all. Not just meaningful. They have not done it at all. But no, they're trying to. Ahead. All three guys the Packers had tests were put onto the COVID, whatever, the injured list. They have a separate COVID injured list. All of them have returned and are practicing at this point. All of them are marked as recovered and back, including Mason Crosby. So that's a good thing for there. The other sorts of things that we were hearing out of training camp, we wanted to address three specific things, and let's address them in order, Aaron. I talked with Aaron about this beforehand. Josh Jackson, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and then Kamal Martin, which I wrote down to make sure I don't turn him into Kamala Harris, which I've done before. I turned him into Kamal Harris, which is not right. It's Kamal Martin. But we'll start with Josh Jackson. A lot of the word is that he's been kept mostly in the outside cornerback position since camp started. They've been keeping him outside, and he has looked like he's made vast improvements. He had a pretty decent kind of rookie season. And a bunch of them kind of did. Him and MVS, which we'll come to next, kind of in that same boat of having had the flash, had some of that talent show early, and then had that sophomore slump, which that's a thing. We definitely had that with players like James Jones, players like Devontae Adams, even, who were like people. My friends at my annual camp out were talking about how they needed to cut him. We needed to cut him. Devontae Adams. And I kept saying, like, look, he had one down year. This guy was very talented the year before. He had an injured ankle. He'll be fine.
Oh, Devontae's sophomore year was the stone hands, too. Remember that? He was dropping everything.
Yeah.
Like, it was bad.
And in fairness, his actual catch, his drop rate is not what you would want it to be. He definitely needs to improve his hands at some point. But the thing is he's so open, he doesn't have to face many contested catches because his route running is so good. It makes up for a lot of other problems. But to get back to Josh Jackson here, we've got a guy who's going to be – and by the way, my friends have never apologized to me for being totally wrong and letting me be right. But anyhow, you have, Aaron. Aaron, you have. You're the best. I love this man.
I was wrong.
It takes a big man to say that, and
he's really good.
We try to stick to that very much on this podcast of owning when we were wrong, and also very much owning when we were right.
Having in your face when you're right, like I will during the Bucks segment.
But anyhow, Josh Jackson looking very good on the outside so far in practice, for the most part. How much of that is what if we got a wide receiver right now, and how much of that is his ability to stick with people? I don't know, but having him make a jump would completely change this defense. It would make this an incredible defense to have with Savage and Amos in the backfield there, as safeties just cleaning up. If we had, Jair Alexander just playing the way he normally does, and then having King when he's healthy is one of the best number two corners in football. He's not one of the best corners in football, but he's one of the better number two corners in football. I mean, I don't know how many teams have a guy as good as King playing the second best receiver on the team they're facing. And if Josh Jackson can show up and play as a legitimate three, as a guy who could be a two but plays as a legitimate three, I mean, like, that changes the entire face of this defense, especially when you consider the amount of pass rush that we get with bringing three and four. I mean, we don't have to bring Kirksey. We don't have to bring, we'll get to it later, whoever that other linebacker is, be it Owen Burks or Kamal Martin or Ty Summers. We don't have to do those sorts of things, which, I mean, it seems like they like bringing four as much as possible. If we can run Kenny Clark and even whoever's the other guy down, and then bring both the Smiths off the edge. How much time do you have if you need your guys to get away from three legitimately good corners? If Josh Jackson makes that step this year and looks as good as he has in camp, which none of us get to see because there is no preseason, This defense could be just terrifyingly good. And fantasy-wise, could be an incredibly fun team to watch because there's going to be a lot of – I mean, I'm basing this off of the idea that what is being reported by people as having happened in camp translates from the practice field to the regular field, saying that if we can really cover and we can really pass rush, there's not going to be a lot they can't do, and maybe we can get those turnover numbers up from last year. The defense was great last year, got a lot of sacks, got a lot of pressures, did not turn that into a ton of actual turnovers. If we could start getting turnovers on this defense, I mean, look out.
No, that's great news. I'm happy to hear that. No, I was thinking about it also with MVS too, is that both, I mean, and granted, Pettine didn't go anywhere, and we've had the same defensive coordinator for a couple of years now, but still it was a regime change. So, I mean, any of the guys who are coming off their rookie year, you know, you go into your sophomore year, which the sophomore slump, you see that a lot, as you mentioned, but I mean, having a new, you know, coaching staff, new everything, all the turnover, yeah, might have exacerbated. Sure. Is that the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. Both of them seem to work very well in the way that you were describing it.
Magnified the sophomore slump instead, so maybe made it worse. But also too, I'm just happy with all the draft capital that the Packers have put into drafting cornerbacks in my lifetime to have very few of them actually pan out. And then when one does, like he plays for the Chargers now.
Oh, Hayward, Casey Hayward.
Yeah, got rid of him. Micah Hyde. They just tend to get rid of the ones that actually pan out.
Well, then Demetrius Randle became an all-star once we moved him back to once he was moved back to safety by the Browns. He became an all-pro. Well, not all-pro, but he went to the Pro Bowl, we'll say.
I think of all the first, second, and third round draft picks burnt on cornerbacks by this team in my lifetime that have not panned out, or something happened, or they went away. And I'll just be happy if we have a really good backfield for the first time since.
That really does go back to that Ron Wolf mentality, though, is you want to be able to pressure a quarterback, but Ron Wolf always believed in cornerbacks. If you remember that those teams that he had, I mean, he had Craig Newsome, later of lacrosse night train, you know, infamy. If anybody remembers the indoor football league that had the lacrosse night train, but you know, Craig Newsome and then Doug Evans as corners. I mean, those were shut down corners and tall. Big guys.
Tall. Newsome was kind of a string bean, but yeah, they were both. Newsome was 6'3". I think Evans was 6'4", maybe.
Something like that. I thought he was like 6'3". Yeah. Something. But they were both very tall corners and big physical guys who could get things done. And being able to have the ability to shut down what happens on the back half of your defense changes what happens up front. And vice versa. In all reality, vice versa is also true. If you can pass rush, it makes your corners look better because you only have to cover for 2 or 3 seconds.
That defense was stupid anyways because you had Evans and Newsome playing cornerback. They had Leroy Butler and Eugene Robinson 1 year and then rookie Darren Sharper the next year. Yeah. And then you had Reggie and Jones rushing. I mean, there was against that defense. Yeah. Plus decent linebacker play too. I mean, the linebackers didn't even have to be good on that team. So
yeah.
Sorry, George Kuntz. I like you.
George Kuntz and Wayne Simmons. And oh, who's the other? Brian Williams. Not the guy who does the news, but Brian Williams, the incredibly athletic, tall linebacker who picked off a lot of passes. We are just going down memory lane a lot today, but
the little remembered Brian Williams. If you would have put $100 down on the table, I couldn't have gotten him. He's the one we never talk about. He is the 1% of the defense we never talk about.
That guy was good. He was so good. But I mean, like, I talked a bit about Josh Jackson. Having a day here, everybody. Sorry. But MVS, just to make it quick and simple, MVS, hoping for a big comeback season for him. I have absolutely loved this guy since I heard that what he did before coming to camp was draw every single play. What was it? 3 times? He drew the playbook by hand so he would always remember it. You remember things better when you write it down. Like handwriting notes is actually better for you than typing it out because you'll remember it better if you've handwritten it. He hand wrote down the entire playbook like 3 times before he showed up for camp. This guy's got something that's special about him, and he's got great athleticism. The thing is, he's got to put it all together. He did early in the season. I mean, and his it seemed like the game against the L.A. / Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders of Anaheim, whatever it is. I don't know. What I mean, like, it seems like he finally put it together in a big game there. And then he didn't have to do anything for the rest of the year, it seems. He's got incredible speed. He's got decent hands. He's a tall guy. He's got a lot of athleticism. He can really jump. He can get after the ball. It would be great to see him come back and have this. The biggest thing I've seen, and Aaron Nagler has been huge on this for quite a while, is getting the ball over the middle. The Packers threw to the outsides a lot. I mean, even that short little bubble thing, the outside routes to, you know, where you don't have a lot of space to run out there and things like that. The over-the-middle pass did not happen a lot in the offense last year, and it's something where it was a good area to attack with this team. And Aaron Nagler, of course, has been spending a lot of time in this offseason talking about that. If you follow him, which I'm sure you do if you listen to this podcast or any Packers podcast, you probably know who Aaron Nagler is.
It's hard to miss him, and either you love him or you hate him. That's how it works.
Or you do both, depending on the day and what he's saying.
That's me too, depending on what
and
is,
yeah. You know, how much he's had. But at the same point, Aaron's very clear on this. I mean, and it's a good point to make. The throwing over the middle, you need to be able to do it so you can at least make that. I mean, it makes the outsides more open. You're trying to address every part of the field and make every part of the field someplace where you attack. San Francisco definitely does that. Other teams definitely do this. And there's been a lot of stuff in camp about getting the ball over the middle to MVS. I mean, seriously, if you can get him in space over the middle and try to get him between the safeties, a lot of teams run that deep too. A lot of teams run a two and dare you to throw over the middle. Throw it over the middle then if you got an athletic guy who can run. If you got somebody like that you can get over there, let him do it. So it
Jordan Cobb both made a
living cutting that across, take it across the safety's face, and then getting that deep middle third. Nobody runs a three deep. I mean, you don't have the people to do it. You just can't in this offense. And with the way offenses are running, nobody can run a three deep. The middle third of the field is generally an open spot, but I mean, you got to get the ball there in time and just in tempo, so that they're not slowing down, and you don't want to get them lit up either because you got guys coming back towards the middle together. But you can attack the middle on a lot of defenses, especially if they don't have superior athletic middle linebackers, which not a lot of teams do. I mean, a lot of teams leave it open there, and they're trying to stop the run and guard the outsides. And
there's a lot of Blake Martinez's out there. There really are. I remember, and just thinking about that, like everyone complaining, like, and we never really complained about him on the Packers because he was a volume tackler. He was what he was, but he couldn't pass cover. He was still in the top half of middle linebackers in the NFL, I would have to say. But a lot of them don't have that ability. Either they're a passing middle linebacker or a pass defense middle linebacker or a run defense middle linebacker. And now the way that running has come, you know, a lot of teams using the run to, you know, because for a couple of years there was like no one cheated up with anybody except for maybe a safety to stop the run because nobody was legitimately trying to run, it seemed like. But now more teams are making an emphasis back on getting the ball on the ground just to combat that. And that actually does, that brings that middle linebacker up. I mean, I'm kind of talking, this is just basic X's and O's football stuff, but that's just what I've kind of observed, is that teams have started trying to make that middle linebacker have to come up. So, I mean, that makes sense. But, I mean, there's usually a big pocket right there in the middle.
Well, and with the movement towards the Tampa 2, and which is basically just a 2 where your middle linebacker goes deeper. But that works way better if you've got Derrick Brooks as opposed to having, you know, Blake Martinez, who does not get deep. Like, he is nowhere near the athlete Derrick Brooks was, who is a Hall of Fame linebacker. It works very well if you have Derrick Brooks. It works less well if you have somebody who isn't Derrick Brooks or, you know, whatever.
I mean, exactly what we're talking about. I mean, it's only a really, that's why the really good linebackers make a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah. Keekly was really good at that. He's retired now, right?
He just retired.
Retired, right? Okay. Yeah. Right. But Keekly was excellent at that. I mean, he was the best, and that's why he was the best, you know, so.
Right. So that actually kind of brings me into the last point we have, is that Kamal Martin has actually been getting a lot of talk in this camp, and in a lot of ways that middle linebacker spot has been something that's very interesting to talk about. Kirksey has, at least from a lot of the reporting, and everything he's done in practice has looked very good. He's picked off Rodgers a couple of times. The thing is like, we know what Kirksey's going to be in this defense. He's a guy who can cover. So long as he's healthy, he's going to be fine. But what we're talking about is, like, who's going to line up next to him if we're running that base 3-4, which we don't run that a lot. They run a lot of nickel, and they run a lot of kind of a base single linebacker high kind of dime look. They run a lot of nickel, though, so they might.
Yeah,
we'll still get a lot of snaps out of whoever is the number two inside linebacker next to Kirksey. And Kamal Martin, Oren Burks, and Ty Summers are the guys who are really competing for that job. Ty Summers looked very good. I mean, very good. Not great, but he looked very good in the time he had last year during the preseason. Granted, he is not playing against starters at any point that he was out there on the field, but he looked very good. He's a serviceable guy. But, man, Oren Burks has elite speed. He really does. He actually spent this entire offseason getting bigger, putting size onto his frame, but also maintained the 40-yard dash time that he kept. You know, kind of like we were talking about, Hollywood Brown kept that kind of thing by bulking up but still keeping his speed. Oren Burks did that. Oren Burks bounced around when he was at Vanderbilt. He played middle linebacker. He played outside rush defensive end / outside linebacker. And some safety, I believe. I mean, just kind of bouncing around as a guy who was athletic and big enough to kind of take on blocks. But, again, athleticism in college and your actual abilities and scheming and your footwork in the pros. He can't play all those positions. He can play that inside linebacker, and he got bigger this year. So I'm very excited. There are very few people who are rooting for Burks as much as I am. I really don't think there are.
He's drafted 3 years ago or just last year?
3 years ago. He got injured each of the last 2 years.
You've been on the Burks train since he was drafted. I even forgot which college you went to.
No, I don't, because I love this guy. He's a big motor guy. He's got a lot of ability. He can rush from the inside linebacker spot. He's got speed. He's added some weight. I think he's up to 240 or so now.
Like me.
Yeah. I'm going to leave this.
I spent the off season getting up to 240 as well. Didn't lose any speed either.
I've lost some speed recently, we'll say. But anyhow, still, if Kamal Martin, I mean, granted, from the hated Gophers, can come over here and find a way. I mean, he's a big dude. He's got that Bernardrick McKinney sort of look, which, by the way, I desperately wanted the Packers to draft Bernardrick McKinney out of Mississippi State, but he went to the Houston Texans instead and has been phenomenal. Kamal Martin is a tall guy, big long arms. He can be an outside rusher or an inside linebacker. Either way, he's got the athleticism to do it. And they have been just praising him through camp. And again, I will say this because everybody needs to hear this. They are lying to you in camp. Every coach who tells you how much somebody is amazing or somebody this, that, and the other, every coach, every interview you get from a coach is a lie, or at least contains several lies. And you should know this when you draft your fantasy team. Every time they're like, well, I just heard an interview by the wide receivers coach that, Jarvis Landry is going to get 800 targets. You're like, no. No, they're lying to you.
No, they're not.
Every coach is lying to you.
That is incorrect. No Cleveland Brown receiver will get more than 10 targets a game because Baker Mayfield will just quickly run out to the right side and just throw it away. So
throw it away now. A little Red Hot Chili Peppers for everybody.
Yes,
but I would be very excited. I mean, seriously, if Burks and Kamal Martin can push for that second spot, that's going to be a big thing for the Packers team, too, because we have been very much lacking at the middle linebacker. First off, because Burks has been hurt each of the last 2 years. And as much as Blake Martinez was a nice linebacker, an NFL caliber linebacker, who will be starting for the Giants linebacker, he's an average. He's a guy. He is a guy who belongs on a team and nothing more. He will never push to be a Pro Bowler. There will be nothing about him that will be ever more than a guy who is a very sure tackler. He will make the tackle that's in front of him. He does not miss tackles. He will get to the gap, and he will cover his gap, and he will find the running backs, and he will make those tackles. But that's what he does. He's nothing exceptional about him. He's a good linebacker.
Yep.
All right.
Too sure.
All right. So that's really what we wanted to get to in terms of our Packers talk.
Then I guess Aaron Rodgers has been just spot on with his throws in practice, but, I mean, whatever.
The only thing I guess you can say is people have been worried. Anybody who's worried about the amount of interceptions you have seen from him in practice, or at least have read about from him in practice, if you're not actually watching the stuff that's coming out here, don't worry about it at all. Aaron Rodgers throws way more picks in practice all the time than he does in games, and that's because he's practicing. He's working on a specific thing to try to see if he can do this or if he can fine-tune something. He always throws more picks in the preseason practices than he does in actual games. Don't worry about it at all. It looks like he's been throwing just dead on a lot of these deep balls and living it.
Yeah, no, apparently he gave the X-Pac crotch chop after a 60-yard touchdown the other day.
Yeah,
Degeneration
X.
Yeah, exactly. Those passes in the games where it buzzes the linebacker's head by a quarter inch, he just doesn't do that by, hey, I'm just going to try this right now. No, that gets done in practice. That's what practice is, people. That's how you get there. I mean, the thing about Steph Curry, you know, like throwing, you know, trying to shoot like off balance off of one foot, you know, while falling down. It's like, that's stupid. No, it's not, because that's how you're going to be shooting in games. You don't always just get to line up 2 feet next to each other straight up in the air and gooseneck it at the top like Dale Ellis. There is your reference of the night. Anyways, I mean, that's how you...
Sorry, I did a little celebration there for Aaron.
It should be a little bit more wide awake like this more often. Anyways.
I did a little kiss up to heaven. You're like, hey, man. All right.
Dale Ellis is dead?
Dale Ellis. Jeez. All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move on to the two things. And the way we're going to break this down is we've got Brewers and Bucks to talk about yet. And what we're going to do is we're going to put the Brewers first, and then we're going to end happier with the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now we're going to talk about the Brewers. The Brewers did end up winning today. Hader came in and finished out the ninth inning. They beat the Reds in a 4-2 game, and just you wish it felt better.
Smoke Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, and this is the thing.
The team that couldn't beat the Pirates smoked Trevor Bauer.
The Reds, the one thing the Reds have going for them is they have very good pitching. They got Trevor Bauer and they got Sonny Gray, and they've got a very good pitching staff. And you're like, okay, but we seem to hit that pitching. But we play the Pirates, who are the worst team in baseball, not just like the division or anything like that. This was the worst team in baseball.
Hands down.
And we got the pitch. Here's where I want to start with this whole thing. First off and foremost is Bill Schrader said something on the broadcast the other day, and I kind of thought that this had a very good kernel of truth. And, I mean, he's been around baseball a lot. He says a lot of things like this, and this made a lot of sense to me. The pressure on the pitching staff is legitimately high. And we talked about this last week. You and I talked about this, that we have seen a lot from Lindblom. Lindblom has looked very good. Woodruff has been a legitimate ace. Hauser has looked very good. He's a legitimate two. He's not a legitimate ace, but he's a legitimate two. So you got 1, 2, 3, very good. And you're bringing in Corbin Burns, who's looked very good, coming back off of injury or whatever, and just having the ability to say, like, 1 through 4 looks solid on this team in terms of pitching. The pressure on the pitching staff at this point has been just remarkably high, because they have to pitch really well. They have to come out every day and pitch really well, because if they have a game where they give up 3 runs, we're not scoring 2. The batting on this team has been so remarkably inconsistent. It's been hard to fathom how this team just can't get anything done. I mean, Smoke, by the way, the guys who we would have complained the most about, Narvaez and Smoke, had big days today. Smoke had I believe he had a home run. Narvaez had the big hit. They both played very, very well today. And Narvaez and Smoke basically accounted for everything that happened today. But it's been rough for the two of them. And I'll be legitimately hard on them because Narvaez had started off all right but has just not done much for a while. And we really expected more from him. Pino's the legitimate one at catcher right now, right?
Right.
And at this point, I even saw the tweet come out like last week or at the beginning of this week, I guess, the week that we just had. Our top three hitters in terms of batting average are the last three guys in our order. You know, Pina, Urias, and Arcia are the three best hitters on this team, generally speaking. And, I mean, Arcia didn't have as great a week coming into this week now, but it was the Pittsburgh thing is just massively insulting. I just don't understand how that happened. Aaron, do you have any answers?
Why I didn't, when you were asking that question about Manny Pena, that's why I was confirming something that was in my head because I was listening all weekend long. And, you know, except for the stomping by, well, I mean, the first two games were stompings. I guess the Brewers were leading in that 7-2 loss, but no, they weren't leading in that one. Okay, so I wasn't confirming anything. I think I went back to it. But either way. But, like, so yesterday's game against the Pirates, they were actually leading that one. But, like you said, they were up 4-2 on that one, ended up losing 5-4. Saturday was just brutal. I mean, that one was just wire-to-wire butt-kicking. I mean, just when you thought the Brewers were starting to get back into it with a 3-run seventh, they gave up 5 in the seventh. You know, it was...
Like the week that was like we took three straight wins against the Cubs. We lost to the Twins and then beat the Twins handily. We were at an even record at that point. Coming into the Twins, we said, like, hey, we beat the Twins here. We've taken 4 out of 5 against the Cubs and the Twins, two of the best teams in baseball at this point by record. Right. If we can beat the Twins again, we got a chance to be above 500 for the first time. We got smoked by the Twins. And then you and I said this last week. This is the time you start making hay because you got 12 games in a row against the Reds and the Pirates, and the Pirates just smoke the Brewers. Three straight games.
I think I said something, too, like when we said it's you got to make hay against us. I think I said something because we have to make hay, we won't make hay. I don't know. I'm sure I must have said something.
I don't remember.
I'm a Wisconsin sports fan. I understand how this works. So, It was a disgusting series. It's like I said, I didn't watch any of it. I listened to most of it and lost interest in most of the games, except for yesterday, and then lost interest late. It was brought up, you know, the trade deadline's coming up here. When is it?
I don't remember, but you did send out the tweet today saying, you know, like, trade everybody except for Yelich.
Yeah, fire sale to get Yelich out of there. Otherwise, everyone's up for grabs.
Here's the things I want to say. I want to say this. Like, let me go through this.
Maybe keep Woodruff.
Hira? How about Hira? Hira's under control for quite a while yet. I don't remember the exact dates, but he's going to be under control for a little bit.
Sure.
How about Hader? I believe Hader's under control until 2024.
Depends on what you can get for him.
Arcia, I guess, is the one that you say, like, hey, if we've got Urias, you know, if we've got Arcia, and you're saying you're going to put Urias as your day-to-day shortstop.
I'm in the extreme minority here, but I like Arcia, so
I do too. Here's the thing. Answer me this. I'm going to say this way. I try to look at this as in terms of the sheer economics of it, because economics, nobody understands this, but economics is not a study of money. Economics is a social science. It's a study of how people make decisions. So in terms of an economic decision, the study of decision making here, like, how does it change having a 60-game season? What's the value of saying, like, throw away this season and we'll bring everybody back next year, and this will be different if we can extrapolate it over 162 as opposed to just a 60-game season where having Yelich have a, you know, massive, you know, power outage here changes the entire season by so much that you're like, well, normally that would mean nothing, but it means so much more now that it took Smoke a month to figure out how to hit a baseball again. It took Yelich a month to figure out how to hit. Do you just throw it out and say, like, we can't trade because there's no value to winning this year as opposed to next year? And this is, I mean, such a small sample size. What are you going to do?
Sure. I mean, I definitely wouldn't trade up at this point if I were the Brewers. I wouldn't be a buyer. I mean, I'd be a seller 100%. I mean, if you can get the right price for somebody, I mean, it's well noted that the Brewers farm system is depleted.
Yeah.
At best. I mean, how did we get Urias again? Who'd he come from?
The Padres.
For?
We had a couple different lower guys. I can't remember exactly who was in the trade there, but.
Who was the main guy that we traded, though, to get him?
I can't remember. I don't know off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up. No, I'm not going to spend the time on it right now.
Right, exactly. So I just remember Urias was kind of a big get for us. So, I mean, I don't know. If it's one of those things that, like, if the season's just going to be a waste anyways and you're not going to win it anyhow, I mean, yeah, I would say don't. I mean, that was a little bit, of course, extreme on Twitter, like, as always. But, I mean, like, if you're going to move some people, move some people. Like, move some people, like deliberately move them. Don't move them out of emotion or frustration. But, like, if someone's offering you something for someone and it's hard to pass up on, you know, it turns out the three prospects that we ended up giving away for CC Sabathia, none of them ever panned out. Laporta never panned out, even though he was supposed to be some big deal. Yeah. So you don't know what you're going to get. But I mean, if someone's looking and going, hey, how much for that closer with the long hair over there? And you're like, he's under control for a long time and he's a good pitcher. And they're like, well, look at all this over here. And you're like, well, you know, like there's a couple top 10, you know, there's a top 10 prospect in there, a couple top 100 prospects, something like that. You're like, well, you know, it's hard to replace the guy. Yeah, obviously. But I mean, we're not the Yankees. We don't have the luxury of being able to keep a closer for 20 years, you know? So
true.
You got to be able to be flexible and be able to make those moves to save salary. Now, like you said, he's under control for a while and stuff like that. Yeah, I get that too. But I mean, I'm not saying Hader specifically, but I mean, that's just the example I came up with. If something good comes up, it's kind of hard not to go for it, especially if you think that this year's a loss anyways. You know, you got to always be looking forward always. So
that's true. I'll give you that. But here's the thing to think about is the Brewers are 2.5 out of the wild card at this point. And the one team right directly ahead of them is St. Louis. And St. Louis is going to play a billion doubleheaders between now and the end of the season. But also the other team is San Diego, who has been just killing it recently, I guess. But they're 5.5 a game ahead of the Brewers, but only 2.5 to St. Louis. The Brewers aren't out of contention with how bad they've been playing, and there's a good chance that they could get just average play from Smoke, and Yelich could come back and play like Yelich, which he has not. Even with the couple home runs that he's been able to put up, he's not batted over 300 this month, and you still feel like he's somebody who's going to be able to do that soon, and turned around.
In that vein, then, I mean, what you said too, like, just don't touch it and let it go. I mean, granted, we haven't seen Craig Timber yet. I mean, so whether that'll actually happen, I mean, you don't know. They might, you know, even though they haven't played a whole season up to this point, they might go on a tear in September. You don't know, like you said. And yes, that's true about the Cardinals too. And I mean, there are 8 playoff teams this year. So, I mean, that's expanded as well. So, I mean, I'd say that there's not a lot of pressure from underneath in the division, but I mean, we just got swept by the Pirates. But I mean, that goes back to my old, like, I've never liked the Pirates, because even though we had like an 18 game winning streak against them at one point, there was a couple of times when we couldn't, when McCutcheon was playing for the Pirates. Ugh. Oh my, they couldn't beat them. And just randomly, some of the, you know, when I lived up north, I could barely make any Brewers games. It was one or two a year, and it always seemed to be against the Pirates, and they would always lose to the Pirates.
Yeah, like, they had a weird stretch there.
Oh, it was so weird. It's the Pirates are always just like that feast or famine, too. And that was how it was a couple of years ago when it was that weird game where the Brewers were playing when the Packers were playing, and there was tons of cheering, but there was nobody in the stands because it was the Packer-Viking game. That was just last year. Yeah, the first meeting last year. Anyways, it was but they still lost to the Pirates on the stretch in that one too, and they ended up losing 3 out of 4. But I guess maybe not sell the house. That was a little bit of a, but I mean, at the same time, if someone's offering something.
I get the feeling at this point, but I mean, like, I still feel like they can get past the Reds here, who are kind of in the same boat as the Brewers. And then, I mean, we have four more games. We have three more games against the Reds, four more games against the Pirates to end the month. By the time we'll be back here, the Pirates and Brewers will be finishing up their fourth game in the next series.
But does this team really have the makeup to make any kind of impact in the playoffs if they were to make the playoffs? That's kind of what I mean. Granted, like if you go to a two-man rotation, they've got it. But
even on a three, I feel decently good about this team. And I feel like they can get to there. At this point, Hira has not been hitting well. And a little bit of that is that he came up last year. This year, they figured out he hits breaking balls very, very well. And you go after him with more of the fastball changeup. And he's going to have a little harder time.
The opposite of Serrano.
Yeah, what you need to do is find a way to, you know, once he grows past that point, because he's a good enough hitter, he's going to figure out how to hit all of that. Once he starts getting back up and around on that, and once Yelich kind of gets back into form, as long as they're kind of within striking distance, I think they can be all right to get there. If they were able to get past the Cardinals and into that other wild card spot, it's going to mean that we're going to be at a point a month and a half from now where the Brewers are at somewhere where Yelich is going to be more confident, more comfortable again. Hira's probably back to hitting again. The Holt experiment completely failed. If we can get Urias and Arcia out there more frequently, if we can get Narvaez to hit like normal, we can have an interesting team. And then any given day sort of thing. I think they have a chance, but yeah, I mean, it's hard when you're Milwaukee. We don't have the kind of lights out hitting right now, especially with the loss of Lo Kane. You know, like Lorenzo is just such a game changer playing that outfield position. And then, you know, you're bringing Gamel off the bench as opposed to starting Gamel. And that changes a lot of this team. Losing him, I think, changes a lot of how I feel about this team in the playoffs. I would just like to see this team still play this out. I guess in the long run of how I feel about this team, we have a lot of young people on this team. And I think if we've got a core of Hira and Yelich, Arcia, Urias, and then Hader in the back end, Knebel's going to start slowly building himself back up into something. Claudio's just kind of a guy. I mean, I'd like to see more from him, but he's been okay.
Claudio's Claudio.
Yeah. Phelps has been good. And, we got a couple other guys coming up, Rasmussen and Perdomo. As more future prospects than current prospects, I think that the current team, as is, we don't have a ton in the minor leagues at this point in terms of what they have there. But the team that they have right now is a very young team that is fairly protected for most of what we have left on those players. Other than Lorenzo's a little older. Yelich is not old by any means, but he's on a second contract finally. And we've got a lot of young guys. We do need to find a legit first baseman at this point, though, because Smoke he's a body. That's where I say, like, there's some spots that need to be filled. For what Braun's making, he needs to produce more and show up more frequently in games. He does not give us the production that I would like to see out of a guy who we were hoping having the DH this year was going to be something that was going to really make him into an effective everyday type of player, but he doesn't bat nearly enough to really feel good about what we're giving him. So, yeah, I think this is a top edge team, not one of the top teams, but somebody like they could be a wild card and then be a spoiler for somebody. They could ruin somebody's season. I don't know that I expect much more from them, but I'd like to see them make the playoffs for a third year in a row.
That'd be nice. No, I'll give you that. Okay.
Okay. I'm not on the full sell team yet, though. I don't know if I've convinced you yet, but we'll see where we are.
Give me a week. Give me through four games against the Reds and four more against the Pirates, and we'll talk.
Okay. That's fair enough. Hey, Aaron, how do you feel about those Bucks?
I want to say that I was spot on last week in my assessment of how the series was going to go. And I don't, of course, because we're low rent here, we don't have the audio ready to go for everybody.
No,
but I do believe that what I said last week was that I would not be surprised if the Bucks came out game one against Orlando, who were massive underdogs to the Bucks in game one. As a matter of fact, if you would, I think what it was, if you would put $100 down, you would have made like $1,500, like betting on Orlando in that game.
We did talk about the betting odds.
Last Tuesday, they game one against Orlando, they came out flat and lost 122 to 110. And that was the same day that the Lakers lost to Portland Trail Blazers. Okay. So both one seeds lost eight right off the bat. So it was a little bit of a shocker for the playoffs. Well, since then, game two, Bucks walked away 111-96. Then Saturday, and that's what I said too. They're going to lose game one. It's going to be a slap in the face, and then they'll win the series 4-1, which I am one game away from being completely right about that.
I think you're going to nail this.
What's that?
I think you're going to nail this then too, because
because it was game one. It looked bad, and then since then it's just been utter domination. 111-96 in game two, 121-107 in game three on Saturday. Today they won 121-106. You know, another.
And if you're watching them, they aren't that close. Seriously, today the Bucks were just dribbling out the last 3 minutes. Giannis wasn't out there. They were legitimately not trying to shoot.
They're winning 14, 15 points, which is, you know, not running away with it by any means. It's not running away and hiding. But, I mean, that's a comfortable lead for the end of the game. And, yeah, like you said, it's some scoring at the end by the other team just to kind of make it close and just not shooting, just playing the shot clock entirely.
I think the Bucks' last 8 points were all free throws because, I mean, they kept fouling to try to, you know, stop the clock, to try to stay in the game as much as they could. Orlando trying to find a way to stay in a game, but I mean, like they did, they were just fouling to stay in it, and the Bucks are making their free throws and just kind of staying. I mean, like I said, I think their last 8 points almost, I'm guessing at that, it was probably seven or six, but they were shooting free throws down the stretch. They weren't actually taking big shots. They were just in bonus. And the game the other day, the Bucks got up by almost 40 and Orlando made a giant push to just get it back to 12. And then the Bucks just walked away again. I mean, they opened it back up, but I mean, like, Orlando had to spend just a ton of energy just to make it a 12-point game.
Right.
And they can't legitimately hang with this team, especially they've had a couple injuries, but I mean, like, they are not on the Bucks pace. The Bucks went six deep today. Korver, Connaughton, DiVincenzo, Hill, Williams, and Ilyasova all getting considerable playing time. 22 minutes for Connaughton, 23 for Hill, 14 for Williams, 19 for Korver. 10 points for Korver today, too. Playing very well down the stretch, giving the Bucks good minutes. Yeah, this team has been playing very well. Middleton had 21 points today. That was nice to see. He hasn't been the most effective, but he's been shooting better. He generally has been somebody who the complaint is he disappears in the playoffs. But he's been all right today, and you can just see it on Giannis' face how happy he is every time Middleton makes a shot in a big moment, because he wants other people to score on this team. Right. And every time Middleton makes a shot, everybody in the NBA offices just gets a little sick because they want him to leave.
Right, exactly. And just looking ahead here too. So the Bucks are the only team in the East that did not close out their series in four games. Miami beat Indiana.
Yeah.
I think yesterday too, is to win that one 4-0. Yeah. Boston beat the 76ers, 4-0 to none, which, imagine that, 76ers, what did they call that? The process.
The process. You got to believe in the process or don't.
The process involved firing their coach today. So
good. That team is terrible.
And then of Toronto, who of course is put up a 150 spot yesterday, I think, against Brooklyn. They scored 150 points in a game. Yes, in an actual NBA basketball game, John. That's 75 points a half. So they won 4-0 to none. So I'm glad that the Bucks are finding their groove. And like you said, a lot of players getting on the court and playing and it actually looking good, because Miami's not going to be easy And the game, the series after that won't be easy either, because it's going to be Toronto.
Miami grinded. They were grinding it out here. I'm looking at them. I mean, they only scored 99 in their win against the Pacers to close them out. I mean, they've got, like we've said here before, too, that's not a team that I feel confident playing against. For whatever reason, they seem to have the ability to kind of get after the Bucks. I guess we'll see how that all plays out. It's going to be interesting watching how the East kind of trickles down here as it goes and see how that all works out. The Bucks are going to win this. I feel they're going to win the next game. They've been getting too much good play. They have not been burning out their starters either. They have not been, the Trailblazers and the Rockets are, spending all of their players' capital trying to keep their teams in it by playing all of their starters as much as possible to get the big scoring that they can get. The Bucks have not been doing that. They have been playing their plan. They are not trying to blow out the Magic. They're just trying to keep the Magic down. They stay ahead of them. They play with them for a bit. They'll get a bigger lead. They'll take their starters out. And I get mad at people who are so upset that Giannis was not playing giant, 40, 42 minute games against the Magic in the very first game when they lost. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you do need to calm down. Save all your energy, because it's going to be needed in the next round, because there's going to be things to be worried about in this next round. The Heat have been playing particularly well. And again, this is a team that plays well against the Bucks.
Right.
I mean, this is the Heat with Dragic, Crowder, Butler. Butler definitely is the guy you have to keep looking out for. I mean, he didn't have a lot in this game. He only had 6 points against the Heat today.
Right.
Adebayo and Robinson starting, and they go, they're going five deep on their bench most times here. They still have Haslam, who they can go six deep with him or seven deep with a couple of these other guys. So it'll be definitely interesting to see how this all plays out. The Bucks probably getting the Heat next is the most likely scenario.
But yeah. I want to say was the Heat two back during, the regular season. God, that feels so long ago now. But like the Bucks had that ripped off, 16 straight games or something like that during the regular season?
Something like
Wasn't
that.
Wasn't it? Yeah, and it was the Heat that ended that streak, I believe.
Probably. Like I said, it just seems odd. They seem to have the Bucks number. Now, I'm looking back through Heat versus Bucks this year. They played three games. Heat had an overtime victory in October. They beat the Bucks pretty handily, almost by 20, it looks like. It was a 105-89 game back in March. Oof. And then the Bucks beat the Heat in August here, 130-116. But, the two games before, everything went insane in our world, kind of sports-wise and otherwise, flipped upside down. The Heat took games against the Bucks, and you just kind of, I don't know, it's one that makes me feel uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable sort of feeling how they went. The one in August here that they just had, Middleton was able to get 33 points. Giannis, too, actually, they both had 33 points in that game. And it was able to make that a very high scoring game where the Bucks were able to just walk away from them, 130-116.
Right.
But you got to be able to stick with this team, and you got to try to find a way to play some defense against a multifaceted, well coached team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and looking at the playoffs in general too. So much like the Bucks, the Lakers, after getting smacked in the face right off the bat by Portland and Charles Barkley declaring that it was going to be a sweep. They're up 3-1 now too. Denver, who were supposed to be the sneaky pick out of the West, they're getting whomped now by the Jazz. They're down 3-1. Like you said, Houston and OKC are beating up on each other, and then Dallas, giving the Clippers a run for their money. And Luka Doncic, everyone missed him. By the way, everyone in the draft missed him at least once.
Third and then traded.
Yeah,
he's been so good.
43, 17, and 15 last night or something for a triple double.
Yeah, something great. He's been phenomenal. I mean, they say like, well, I've seen some people on Twitter saying stuff like, well, the future of the NBA looks like Luka Doncic. You're like, Giannis didn't go anywhere yet. He's not like some old guy who's on his way out. Like, he's the current face of the NBA at this point, and he's probably this year's MVP. He's been phenomenal. But yeah, I guess I would miss playing the Sixers in the second round of the playoffs, because that would be phenomenal, because I hate them so much as an NBA team. That's the only game I've seen the Bucks in this year, was watching them beat the crap out of Embiid, who didn't play much in the second half because that game was over.
Didn't play much in the second half because they don't use him anyways. So he just stands on the floor pouting the whole time.
I saw a very good Twitter response, which was the Celtics-Sixers series in one photo. And it was a photo of a four-on-one with Embiid standing in the lane as four Celtics are rushing him. It's like, so on the other end of the floor are four 76ers and only one Celtic. But there's four-on-one, and it's just Embiid like, what are you going to do, guys?
And no, yeah, it's about it too. And the thing is, I mean, it just proved how important Simmons is to that team. And
which is nothing.
I mean, it's the other way around. And everyone's talking about, well, Simmons has got to go and you keep Embiid. And it's like, I don't know, man. I think it's the other way around. I think Simmons is, he can't shoot, but the guy can play defense and the guy can dribble and the guy can pass.
And Embiid can do a lot of things. I think he's very good on offense.
He's a big whiner who just goes away. Halfway through the game, he just goes and hides in the corner. He doesn't assert himself.
Exactly right. I'm with you on this. He's a gigantic baby. I mean, gigantic, I mean like a 7 foot tall baby.
And not like Big Baby. Big Baby was a different player.
Yeah.
But
out of LSU. Big Baby. LSU played for the Celtics.
Celtics, for a little while. That's why I said Simmons. You keep Simmons and you get rid of Embiid. Simmons is a player. I mean, like I said, he can't shoot, but he's a player, man. He plays hard, and Embiid is just he's just a big whiner.
I guess between the two of them, I mean, and I really don't like Embiid. I liked watching him play at KU because Rock Chalk Jayhawk. That's mostly for my sister-in-law. I played an NCAA season as the Jayhawks because they're terrible in NCAA football. And I recruited a guy out of Sheboygan who turned out to be the best receiver in history in my game. But nobody cares about that. But I mean, like, I almost went to Kansas because my wife almost took a job in Kansas City. And so we thought about it and didn't do it. But
thank God.
Right. It would have been interesting. But, Lawrence, in Kansas, which is not far from Manhattan. They're both within a very short drive.
K-State is Manhattan, right?
Yep, the Little Apple. Okay. They're both very close to Kansas City. Neither one of them's that far. I would have chosen KU. Right. My sister-in-law will be very angry with me for saying that, but Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Yeah. I liked him when he played there, but he in the NBA has been such an incredible whiner. Everything is the worst. He's always such a victim, and he always quits. And he's just unbelievable. He is the biggest fake tough guy. And my son will tell you, I say this all the time, he's the biggest fake tough guy in the NBA. He pretends he's super tough, and like he'll fight and this and that. But then like as soon as there is a scuffle, he walks away. I can't stand Joel Embiid.
No, it's weird because he was drafted the year after Giannis too, and I remember at one point I was like, wow, what would have happened if they would have drafted both of them? Because the Bucks had a chance to draft both of them, but they went for Jabari Parker instead.
That didn't work either.
Anyhow,
it seemed like a reasonable pick at the time.
And maybe it's just both being foreign born. I don't know, but it's like they're like the antithesis of each other. Like they're kind of got a lot of the same, and Bean's a bigger body player where Giannis is long and lean, but they're big, both big, powerful players now. But whereas Giannis seems like he's had to fight and scratch for everything he's ever wanted, and that's how he plays on the court. Embiid is just the opposite of that. Like, he doesn't have the drive that Giannis does. He has probably has more God given tools for basketball than Giannis does.
Yeah.
But I mean, watch Giannis shoot a three. It's still a work in progress, you know? So like, yeah. talk about the process. The process is the current reigning MVP who's still not even at 100%. He's still probably like 75%.
Well, I think the difference too is, I mean, yeah. While they're both foreign-born, Joel Embiid is from Cameroon, but he's still, I mean, he grew up in Gainesville, Florida.
Yeah, Janesville.
Janesville, not Janesville. I said that because I think of you. Yeah. Gainesville, Florida.
Yeah.
The Rock School, which is hilarious, in Gainesville, Florida. And they went to Rock Chalk Jayhawk, KU. I mean, he spent his time being a five-star recruit and this and that, right. Whereas Giannis spent his time being a child of immigrants and living in Greece and growing up with the Greek national team and then being an international pick. Whereas, I mean, Embiid, as we all remember, right. Went to KU, played very well, and then got hurt and didn't end up doing a whole lot. I didn't know this. Embiid's father was a military officer, Thomas Embiid, in Cameroon. That's kind of interesting. Anyhow,
so it's military brat. That makes more sense now. Why he's whining? Okay,
not our military, but anyhow, it's
shots fired.
And we're not going to go into fired. Military.
You walked
brats.
Into my world, Embiid. I can't speak to you on a basketball level, but you came to military. Now
we're not going to go shots. Military brat with my wife being she doesn't listen. But anyhow,
yeah,
my son might, and he might tell her. And my wife's a military brat, born at. Fort Knox, but anyhow, I guess I don't know. I don't like Embiid. I don't like Embiid. I think the Bucks are going to win this. We're going to have trouble with the Heat, but I think we'll still beat the Heat. I'm going to call it now. We're going to beat the Heat. Beat the Heat. Yes, Drill Sergeant. Beat the Heat, which meant that we drank from our canteens until they were empty.
Drink water.
Yeah, drink water. But anyhow, we have spent far too much time on this week. But we've spent
way too much time on just. References to old players in different sports.
Possibly true, but this has been a good week because we had sports this week. We had actual legitimate Packers talk this week about several different things. We talked about Bucks playoffs. We talked about the Brewers in the middle of a regular season, which they are only 2.5 out. We're feeling very good about this. Everybody, thank you again for joining us this wonderful week. We're going to have more and more sports talk as we keep going. We're going to see maybe we'll start reaching out for a couple people, start talking about the beginning of the Packer seasons. Hey, fantasy football is coming up soon on a lot of people. Aaron and I just had our fantasy league draft for the league that the two of us are in together with both our wives and several other people, including both my brothers and none of Aaron's brothers because I don't know them that well. And it's good.
And I reached way too far for Alan Lazard. I'll tell you that much.
That's true, but maybe not. Maybe it was a good pick. Anyhow, thank you again for joining us this week. It's been a wonderful week in terms of sports and getting back to things and getting back to just a feeling of some kind of normality. And we appreciate everybody coming out here. Please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us wherever it is that you listen to your podcast, especially on Apple, if you're on Apple, to help other people find the podcast. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thank you again for joining us. And remember, whether you are on the town or on the go or on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
Your number 12 Wisconsin Badgers football team.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.